All right, folks, we're going to go ahead and get started. If everybody could quiet down. Thank you. I feel like a teacher in a classroom. It's 6 o'clock, so I just want to be respectful of everybody's time. So thank you very much for joining us this evening. I really appreciate you making the time to come out. Got a very full room. That's excellent. We've got, I think I saw about 20 people on Zoom as well. So this meeting is being broadcast on Zoom for folks who couldn't make it here as well. So just from the outset, I've got a microphone. When we get to the question and answer period, please wait to ask your question until Jessica, our constituent services coordinator, brings over the mic so that everybody online can hear your questions as well. So thank you very much. I'm going to explain that. Yep, thank you. So my name is Michael Spaeth. For those of you who don't know me, I'm the town's principal planner. I'm going to facilitate tonight's meeting, and I'm also the town's project manager reviewing the applicant's request. So I'm kind of wearing two hats here this evening. Again, thank you very much for making the time. I know, can I see a show of hands of folks who have been to one of the previous meetings for one of these two cases? So a pretty good hand. Either way. Yep, doesn't matter. Just so that you've heard about it before. So that's good. So we've got a pretty good selection of folks. So previously, these two properties, even though they're related because it's the same applicant and the same proposed developer, were separated because both properties have individual issues that don't necessarily overlap. And so that was the rationale for holding those meetings separately so that we could focus on both sides individually and focus on any questions and concerns that neighbors for those two properties might have had. We're bringing everybody back together now because, of course, we know the project has been quiet for a little bit, going on a year now, while the applicant got some stuff wrapped up, which they're going to go through as part of their presentation. But we are getting ready to move forward to public hearing for the applications before the commission and council. So we wanted to bring everybody back together, considering it had been such a long delay, and just refresh everybody's memory on where we are, what the project is, and then what the next steps are so everybody's aware of what's happening. So as a facilitator with my one hat, I'm going to be as fair as possible. I want to try and maintain a fair and efficient meeting. So I know there were some little posters handed out, which is okay. Please don't show those during the meeting or don't clap or hoot and holler. I'm trying to just try and keep as efficient a process as possible because we've got a lot of folks here. I'm sure we're going to have a lot of questions. I will also start with there are no decisions being made tonight. This is just a neighborhood meeting to have a conversation with neighbors. So when we do get to public hearing with commission and council, that's the opportunity for neighbors to speak their mind to those two bodies, and that's when decisions will be made. So any cheering or clapping or holding up posters isn't going to have any intended effect tonight because no decisions are being made. So I please just ask you guys to help me keep the meeting go as smooth as possible. And there will be an opportunity for questions in just a second. Let's see. So it's just some ground rules. Hopefully everybody grabbed the ground rules sheet on the way in. It's also listed on the screen behind me. You don't need to read through those individually. Essentially what it boils down to is please just be respectful. Be respectful of everybody in the room. That includes the applicant. That includes staff, of course, please. But also of your fellow neighbors here. We're all here to try and have a constructive conversation, so please just be respectful, and I appreciate it. So just some housekeeping for those of you who haven't been to town campus before. There are restrooms and a drinking fountain out the doors that you came in. So if at any point during the meeting you need that, please don't hesitate. Feel free to just go ahead and get up. Please silence your cell phones if you haven't. Sometimes I have to do that as well, so I'm in that boat also. So for the folks on Zoom, your microphones are going to be muted for the time being. When we get to the question and answer period of the meeting, there will be an opportunity for folks on Zoom to ask questions as well, and I will go over the ins and outs of how to unmute yourself and how we'll do that at that point. Can I see a show of hands of folks who received a postcard this evening? Okay, good. So pretty much everybody. So that indicates to me that you're already on our notification list. So every step from this point forward, you will be notified via postcard of when and where those events are happening. If you didn't receive a postcard, please make sure that you signed in that's going to make sure that you get added to that list and you can stay up to date on the next steps moving forward in the process. We are scheduled to go to 7:30 this evening. It's okay sometimes. Typically, we go till 8 because we have outstanding questions that still haven't been answered. And I know the applicant and staff are certainly willing to stay after if there are still remaining questions that need to be addressed. So we're certainly willing to do that. Hopefully, you grabbed the survey sheet that was at the front desk. If not, we're going to, I forgot to put that slide in, but please take a picture of the QR code, one that's being held up there. Thank you very much. So we're instituting a new survey process where we're really trying to figure out if we are doing a good job as staff providing this service to neighbors. So we please encourage you. I know it's at the end of the meeting and everybody's just ready to go home, but I really do ask if you could participate in that survey. It's providing us valuable feedback to find out if there are things that we should do less of, or there are things we should do more of. So we really appreciate anybody's participation in that. So, yes, sir.
I have one question. With all these people in this room, we're all concerned about this project. Why are there no council members in this room to hear our concerns?
Okay, great question. And fair enough. So I will also ask that we do hold questions until we get through our presentations, but because you asked, I appreciate that. Quite the contrary, actually, Councilmember Bowen is sitting in the back of the room listening. I can't speak for the other council members or commissioners, but what's happening with this meeting being on Zoom is it's also being recorded. And so we will post the video of this entire meeting of your questions, of whatever concerns neighbors might have, and the conversation that ensues on our project website so that all of the commissioners and council members will go back and watch that before their respective meetings. And they do. I assure you they do.
Thanks,
yeah, absolutely. So before I jump into my portion of the presentation, I just want to also lay out an important distinction. This is a ask from the property owner, and it's their application. It is not the town's application. Sometimes that gets a little blurry. We are charged with providing due process when we do get applications, but first and foremost, it is the applicant and their representative's duty to create, seek, and justify approval from town council, okay? So just keep in mind as we go through this, it's not the town's application. We are reviewing it and processing it. So I just want to quickly walk us through my presentation, and then I'll turn it over to the applicant. So, of course, there's a laundry list of meetings that everybody's been to. We've had two meetings for each of the two projects, of course. That's a four total, bringing everybody back for tonight's meeting. And then the next steps are anticipated to be the Planning and Zoning Commission hearing on December 5th, which you will get postcards for. And then we are anticipating that that will go to town council in January. You'll notice I don't have a date on there for January town council because those haven't been finalized yet. They'll be finalized by town council during the December meeting. But again, I assure you, if you've gotten a postcard before or if you signed in, you will get postcards for both of those meetings. And again, the yellow signs that are all over the place that I know you guys saw, you can't not see them. We'll have updated stickers to let everybody know about those meetings as well. So quickly, I'm just going to do a brief overview of the applicant's request, then I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Olin, representing the applicant, and ask him to do a short presentation about what they've done in the meantime since we last met separately, and then we're going to turn it over to you. And that's the most important part of the meeting, where we're going to hear your questions, your comments, what concerns you might have. If there are things that we can kind of tease out and see if there are some mitigation that can be incorporated into the plan to address any of your concerns, we'd like to see that happen. If not, that's okay too. We want to hear the conversation and just make sure, again, we have a productive conversation tonight. So, again, I know this isn't the first neighborhood meeting, but this truly is kind of the last best opportunity to try and effectuate change with the applicant's proposals. Because once you go to commission and council, the interaction between neighbors and the applicant and the property owner is diminished a little bit. You're kind of working through the commission and council, not to say that you shouldn't do that. Please do participate. But this really is the opportunity to interact with the applicant and see if there are some areas of compromise that might be able to be found. So if we can... yes, so town council, yeah, so again, if we could just hold questions until we're done. Commission ends up making a recommendation to town council, and then town council is the body who actually will either approve or deny the applicant's request. And both of those are public hearings as well. So everybody in this room will have an opportunity to come and make their voices heard at both of those meetings, okay? If we can, it has not actually, hasn't been to commission or council. So this particular application has not gone to public hearing. There were other applications that were denied by town council, but that is not related to this particular application we have tonight. Again, if I could just please ask that all questions be wait until we're done with the presentation. I promise you there will be time for questions. So just to be quick for everybody, I hope you grabbed the handouts that were at the table when we first came in. So as you can see on the screen behind me, there are two separate but related projects. One is just north of Safeway, of course, adjacent to the Horizon subdivision. The other one is across the street to the west, and it's bordered by, on the north, Woodburn and Tangerine on the south. So again, just keep in mind, they were separated. It's all the same property owner and the same potential developer. So just keep in mind as we move through this, we've got two separate parcels that we're talking about. So ultimately, the applicant does want to develop two single-story rental developments is what they are. So on the what we're calling the east side north of Safeway is a plan for 87 units. On the west side across Rancho Vistoso is a plan for 118 units. Again, the applicant's going to go into much more detail during their presentation, but ultimately this is what the applicant is proposing to build on these two parcels. Now, to get there, they need a rezoning, or what's called a planned area development amendment. So currently, as you can see outlined in the images on the screen, both parcels are zoned C1. C1 is a commercial zoning district that allows things like retail, restaurant, office, things of that nature. Very similar to what you see across the street where Ace and Walgreens are. That's kind of what a typical C1 development is. So what they're proposing is rezoning the property to high-density residential, which is a zoning district that allows single-family residential, that allows townhouses, condos, as well as multifamily apartments. Again, their ask is to do the single-story rental-style development, which, again, they'll provide a little bit more detail on. Most of you, I'm sure, are familiar with this, but if you are a neighbor of either of these two properties, you live in Rancho Vistoso, which is the Rancho Vistoso planned area development, which is that graphic that's shown on the screen. So these two, again, if it is, yep. So if we can hold questions, please. Okay, yeah, no, and again, there will be an opportunity to ask questions, I promise. If you could just let me finish here and then I'll turn it over to the applicant. I promise we're going to get to it. So this area is also part of Rancho Vistoso, which was adopted in 1987 and established the current C1 zoning on the property. So that's where the zoning comes from. The applicant, again, is proposing to change that as part of these two separate applications that we're looking at tonight. So when the town reviews these types of applications, we look at things like general plan conformance, zoning code compliance. We're looking at compatibility with neighbors. Are there appropriate transitions? Are things like drainage and traffic addressed to the town standards, right? So those are the things that we will ultimately be making a recommendation to the Planning and Zoning Commission on. But again, it is the applicant's charge to justify that what they're proposing is appropriate, okay? So obviously we know from the first neighborhood meeting that traffic and access was definitely a concern for folks. So we do have our esteemed town engineer, Mr. Paul Kiesler. Sorry, I forgot your name there. Here as well, so he's going to, of course, be fielding a lot of questions that you guys have about that. So I do want to just kind of lay the groundwork a little bit. So obviously, you guys all live there. I drive through there. Everybody knows that area outside of the Safeway Shopping Center has had some traffic safety concerns for years, and it still does. We are all aware of that. So, of course, the town has taken some steps, some intermediate steps, to try and alleviate the pressure there. The first, of course, was adding that exit onto Tangerine, which, believe it or not, I know some of you shaking your head, it does help the town from our perspective. So we also most recently just restricted the left-hand turns off out of Safeway, which I'm sure many of you saw. That's a huge improvement from a safety perspective. So again, taking intermediate steps, what we do want to see in the long run, regardless of whether the applicant's project is approved or not, we do as a town want to see a permanent solution to some of those existing safety issues that are out there. So the applicant is proposing some solutions as part of their plan, and we can get into those, of course, but ultimately the town wants to see a solution regardless of what happens with these two properties. So I just want to kind of lay that as a groundwork. We'll let the applicant get into the detail about the existing and proposed traffic as part of what they're asking for. Now, I've taken 20 minutes already. I'm going to ask the applicant to do no more than that so that we can have the bulk of the time for you folks to ask your questions and try and have that constructive dialogue. So I'll turn it over to Mr. Olin, who is representing the property owner.
Good evening. Sorry. Good evening. I'm Paul Oland. I'm representing the property owner and Next Metro. I won't take 20 minutes. I've got a lot of slides, but I'm not going to go through all of them, and we can then reference them as needed as questions come up later. So I do want to just take a few minutes to familiarize anybody who's...
Talk a little slower. Somebody just said they can't understand.
Well, it's hard to understand the...
But be quick, yes. Yes. Okay. I want to make sure that if there's anybody here, and I think there are, who are not familiar with Next Metro, what we're proposing, that you all are familiarized with what we're proposing. I know that goes hand in hand with traffic and everything, but in terms of what's actually on site, that's what I want to get into here. So Next Metro has built a reputation in the Tucson, Phoenix, and some other areas for developing high-quality, high-dollar rental units that bring in an atypical renter base compared to a lot of other multifamily options. And we'll get into some of that a little bit. But it has proven in many areas to be a low-impact, quiet neighbor, especially given some of the controls that they put in on residents, as well as the single-story nature of the projects. Now, a lot of people have preconceived notions about rental homes, rental units. A lot of those are fairly true in some parts of Tucson and elsewhere, but they tend to be less true in high-value places like Oro Valley. So, for example, here, these are typical demographics from Next Metro developments to kind of show you the kind of renters that they typically get in their neighborhoods. So about half of them are over 45, single, and have moved from a traditional single-family home. So these aren't people who've typically been in a rental situation their whole life. A lot of them are downsizing. They've got about half as many children per unit as typical, so, and that's in part because of the average age. There's actually a fair number of empty nesters that move into these as they're downsizing as well. 12 to 24 month leases, you can see typical is a little over 2 years. They run background checks and have a crime-free, drug-free, no tolerance policy. Anybody with a felony is not allowed to live there. That is unlike single family neighborhoods. And that also applies to guests. So, and it's basically a one-strike-you're-out rule. If you or a guest violate the policy, then that's grounds for your lease termination. In terms of drug-free, they follow federal regulations, so there's no medical marijuana allowed there either. This is a closer view of the piece north of Safeway, which Mr. Spaeth had labeled as 5U. This one has, as he mentioned, we've got 88 units on here. It's a mix, ones, twos, and three bedroom units. We've got access coming off of the northern Safeway access, and I've got another slide that kind of zooms in on that to show the adjustments that we're making to that to try and fix some of the existing issues. We've also got along the northern edge, which is where we're adjacent with the Horizons neighborhood, that's typically 5 to 9 feet below in its final configuration. So with an 18-foot building height, the homes are going to be set down and then no more than 18 feet above that reduced one. So with those rear walls, there should be a very minimal impact. And again, I've got another slide we can show there. This is the piece on the other side of Rancho Vistoso, known as 7I. We've got 119 units here, again, all single story, two access points. Actually, I'm sorry, I want to point out one other thing. This one here does have two access points. Both of them are gated. The first one here is, right there. The second one is over here, and it's an emergency-only access. So that won't be getting resident use. This one here also has two access points. Primary access point is right here, also gated. So we'll be putting in a new connector road from the Wells Fargo driveway. There's a median break there in Tangerine, up and connecting to Rancho Vistoso Boulevard, where the signal will be. And again, the other part of the development is right here. Woodburn will be reconfigured, as you can see, to bend down, tee in, and then this will come in up that way. So one of the reasons why we're having to put in what's kind of a, it feels like kind of a Band-Aid solution, but it's because of the history in Rancho Vistoso. So originally, that graphic that Mr. Spaeth had that had all the colors on it that showed the entire Rancho Vistoso master plan, if you were to zoom in on that, you would see a series of circles all the way up and down Rancho Vistoso Boulevard and some of the other major roads in the development, and they indicated where signals are likely to be needed. And there was one right there at Woodburn and Rancho Vistoso. So for whatever reason, back in the 90s, the Horizons development was built about 45 feet too far south. And what that means is that a four-way signal could no longer go there. And I've asked the people who were around back then. I've never heard a real good explanation as to why that happened, but it did. The result is that you can't have a signal coming through where it was originally planned, so we need to get a little more creative. So that's what this reconfiguration does. This is an example of the architecture. About 60% of the units are 2 or 3 bedroom floor plans, and those are detached units. The remainder are 1 bedroom floor plans attached. So this is 2 1-bedroom units put together. And again, they're all single story. This is preliminary architecture for one of the 2-bedroom homes. And just like a lot of the single family neighborhoods in Rancho Vistoso, Sonora Valley, there will be a number of different architectural treatments. So when you drive in, they'll all look a little different. There'll be a variety there. And of course, they will all be subject to and meet the Rancho Vistoso design guidelines, which of course, all of your homes do as well if you're living nearby. This is a typical interior. Quality finishes, stainless steel appliances, granite countertops, designer flooring. Basically, the goal here is bright, clean spaces with high ceilings that are inviting and demand high rent. This is another example of a typically bright and open floor plan. Now, we've gotten questions about rental rates over the course of this process. So in Rancho Vistoso, the typical single-family homes rent for about $1 to $1.15 per square foot. So a 2,000-square-foot home, for example, would typically rent for $2,000 to $2,300 ballpark. And that's just generally speaking. There are some outliers. In a villa here, we'll have units that are about 700 feet up to about 1,300 feet, and the rents are targeted at around $1,600 to $2,200 a month. So That works out to $1.75 to about $2.30 per foot. So point is, the residents who live here can afford strong rental rates. They're willing to pay strong rental rates in exchange for the safety and the amenitization and the convenience of this lifestyle. I won't spend too much time on this, but these are the amenity areas in 5U. The one on the left is near the leasing office, and it'll have a pool. You can read the labels here, Ramada, outdoor kitchen, things like that. Then there's also a small dog park on the far east end, down closer to Safeway with a picnic overlook area. 7I has very similar amenities, so they'll be convenient for all residents. This is just a little snapshot of another Avila neighborhood with, this is one of their outdoor kitchens here. So you can see the attention to detail, and this is one of the reasons why folks are willing to pay a little extra to live. This is another one, again, pool area. So circulation, of course, is one of the big questions that's come up. I talked through some of the history there in terms of Rancho Vistoso, but the goal here, as Mr. Spaeth said, is to come up with a solution. And solutions really occur most easily when there's a developer who's around to fund the solution. Otherwise, it has to come from the town. So we have an opportunity here where we've got sort of a critical mass with both of these parcels in play. There's enough investment that it can afford to make some of these larger improvements that'll have a benefit for the overall community. Now, I should mention that the infrastructure in Rancho Vistoso was designed to accommodate about 14,000 homes. There'll be about 9,500 homes when all is said and done. I think it's almost built out, but it's built out around two-thirds. It has. It's been built out around two-thirds of its planned density. There really are not very many opportunities left for more development. So these, as Mr. Spaeth mentioned, these are both zoned for commercial. So if those were to be developed commercially and just to use the Safeway shopping center as an example, using the same sort of development intensity. If you just said, all right, well, if these two got developed at that same intensity with an anchor and some shops and some pads out front, it would generate about 5,500 homes, 5,500 trips per day versus these two combined will be a little under 1,500. So it's a significant drop. It's about 70% less traffic than if these were developed as commercial. This is a close-up of what we're proposing on the south side of 5U, north edge of Safeway. So the signal will, I have arrows here, but the signal will be here. The existing northern Safeway access there will be widened. Right now it's got a little bit of a kink in it. We don't have a ton of room to address the kink, but we are widening it out to add extra turn lanes, striping all the way through to this first intersection right here. At that point, we'll also be pulling the existing drive lane behind this building a little bit further north and striping out the area there that creates such a huge visibility issue, right? So if you pull up right here next to this building heading north, then most people would then turn left and then access Rancho Vistoso Boulevard. What striping this area out will do is make it so that can't be where delivery trucks park. There won't be oncoming traffic right there. So you peek out from that building and you'll basically have a lane there that will not be drivable. So that'll greatly increase the visibility there as well as the safety. And so we've been working with our traffic engineer and with the town to kind of figure out what would be best. We'll also be installing a right turn lane off of Rancho Vistoso Boulevard into that access drive. And then the signal will be improved, of course, with typical left turn lanes and everything. And then up here at Woodburn, the median break will be filled in, because we can't have median breaks that close. And again, the original plan was to have a signal here, but because of the way Horizon's developed, that can't happen. I think I'll probably stop there, Mr. Spaeth, so we can get into the other issues as they come up.
Okay, thank you. Let me grab the screen for you. Yeah. Okay, thank you, Mr. Olin. So I appreciate you speeding that up. So, yep, we've got, I'm just going to go ahead and assume we're going to be here till 8 o'clock to make sure we have enough time. So we have an hour and a half for conversation with you folks. So I do want to make sure that you guys are aware we're focusing on that. So just real quick, I'm going to have to scroll through his slides to get to my Zoom one so that our folks on Zoom know how to participate. So if you're on Zoom, you're probably seeing a screen similar to this or something like it. You'll be able to raise your hand as well. What you'll have to do is you'll actually have to select the little icon that says raise hand. Obviously, that's kind of obvious. But depending on the device you're on, you may have to hit the little three-dot button that says more and raise your hand to be able to do that. We'll be notified on our screen here, so we will know when we get questions from you on Zoom. Please make sure that you're unmuted on your end. If you're participating on a phone, you'll have to hit *9 to raise your hand or *6 to unmute yourself. For folks in the room, I would appreciate your patience. I'm going to be bouncing back and forth between folks in the room and folks on Zoom so that everybody has an opportunity to be heard. If we don't have questions, we'll just keep going here. So I'm sure many of you know our constituent services coordinator, Ms. Jessica Hine. She's going to be walking around with a microphone. So as I said, please do hold on your question until she's there so that the folks on Zoom can hear you as well. This goes for myself and staff and then the applicant. If we use any jargon or an acronym that is just confusing and you're not quite sure what that is, please don't hesitate to hold your hand up and we'll try and figure out a way to rephrase the information we're trying to convey. Also over here in the corner is Alex Chavez. She's part of our staff as well. You're going to see that she's actually keeping notes of our conversation tonight. So we want to make sure that you are aware that we're hearing you, we're listening to you, we're jotting down your comments and concerns. And what ends up happening with those is those get worked into staff's recommendation that goes to commission, and then we forward those on to both commission and council as part of our packets so that they have all that information as well. So I just want to make sure that you guys are aware. We are listening to you and making sure that the conversation gets transcribed. I did see some folks taking pictures of the slides, so I will just point out that not only is our conversation in this meeting being recorded, but we will post the presentation on the website as well. So for folks who maybe couldn't watch the meeting or want to go back and look at it, and that reminds me, I failed to mention that. So if you aren't familiar with ovprojects.com, I encourage you to go to that website. It's actually on the little handouts that everybody grabbed. Each of these two projects has their own web page on that website. And what we do is we upload as staff all of the new information that we receive, and we upload. That's where the video of tonight's presentation is. The presentation itself will all be on there. So if you're not familiar with it, I please ask you to bookmark it to stay in the know, if you will. So, I think I covered everything. We'll go ahead and just see a show of hands of folks who might have a question, and then I'll keep tabs on Zoom, and so we can just start here, and then we'll grab a few on this side, and then we'll migrate to that side of the room so everybody has an opportunity. So
we can also have east and west questions.
Of course. Oh, yeah. So, yeah, any questions on either side at this point now that we're all together? So, yeah. She is going to hold on to the microphone, so just be forewarned.
My question is water. We don't have enough water up there. My pressures drop dramatically. I mean, when I flush the toilet, it chatters in my riser outside the house. And if I run the dish, I mean, if I'm running the washing machine and I flush the toilet, it really chatters. We don't have enough water. And you're going to put 205 more houses out there? Not a good idea.
Okay. Thank you. So, I mean, I know the town does have an assured water supply that our water utility director, I know he's not here tonight, we do have sufficient water to handle these additional homes, but that is part of the conversation. So that will absolutely be forwarded on as your comment.
I actually asked the same question when you had the last meeting. I did it online, and I never got an answer back.
Okay. Well, if you want to reach out to me after the meeting, I'll make sure to reach out to you. Oh, and if I could, if you've got more than one question, that's fine. But if we could just be respectful for everybody, and then I can circle back if you've got more than one.
Okay. Excuse me if I have a little distrust in developers, but that's just where I'm at right now. I was wondering, back in 1987, was Next Metro, were they the people that owned this property, or are you a new buyer since the property was developed in 1987?
I got nothing. In 1987, Vistoso Partners was the master developer. I believe there's only been one other owner, which is the current owner.
Okay. So then my follow-up question.
Oh, okay. Sorry. One sec, sir. Can we just get the follow-up? The folks on Zoom can't hear you. Sorry.
Is it the norm that you would buy a commercial property with no egresses or easements and then expect the landowners around you to permit you to use their property? That's my next question.
Sure. So, I mean, I think there's a lot of suggestions built into that question that need to be explained. But typically, to answer your question vaguely, I mean, generally, no. You would buy property with access rights. In fact, in Arizona, legal access is a requirement for transfer of property, and this property has legal access. Both of them do.
Yes, so I was questioning the stop signal that Paul was speaking of. Is that a full stop light that they're talking about on Rancho Vistoso?
Yes, ma'am.
And then is East going to be a gated community? It sounds like West is, so East is as well?
Yes, both of them will be gated.
Okay. Were there other hands on this side, up right up here? And then, all right, if you want to grab him first, and then we'll come to you, ma'am.
I see a lot of curves on those roads there. How is that going to be handled with having people have visibility when they're making their turns?
Okay, so the question was, what is the site visibility for the roads being proposed? Did you want to handle that, Mr. Olin, or either?
Sure, I'm happy to take a stab at it. So currently, I understand that on Woodburn, especially when you're heading southeast, if there's a little bit of excessive speed, it becomes very difficult to turn out of that subdivision because you're looking like back over your shoulder toward the sunset sometimes. I understand that. So part of this is going to be a very detailed roadway design where we're not just trying to make this reconfiguration safe, but we're actually trying to improve the overall situation there, maybe with additional signage or I'm not sure, but when this curve comes in, it will have a tendency to slow down some of that traffic because you'll have to bend down to the right anyway. But again, this our main access is off of that connector road between Tangerine and Rancho Vistoso, so we don't expect a lot of use of the other one on the west side.
Sure. So I just want to make just a quick clarification. When we get into the detailed design, site visibility is one of the primary aspects that we look at when we're dealing with a curvilinear road. So there's certain requirements in which it has to be open, you know, no vegetation, no blockages with the building or whatnot. And the other thing is the speed of the road. When you have curvilinear roads like this, they're all going to be low-speed roads in the first place.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Keeser. So right here, and then we've got a couple on Zoom, and then I'll come back to them.
Hi, I'm Eva Midobuche, and I was here at the last meeting, and I asked the same question, and perhaps I can get some clarification. My question is, well, we're all concerned about safety, and when I look at the tables that are in your traffic impact survey, page 17 table 6, if I recall correctly, this talks about the number of crashes and the different categories as far as severity of the crash, and there's another category, whether it was single car or impact or whatever. The most that is on that table is, of course, the Tangerine Rancho Vistoso first. And you all had 43 total crashes. However, and I mentioned this last time, the numbers don't add up. 43, then you say no fatalities. 19 are then, you're stating, or the table states, that 19 are not injury. So what happened to the other 24? Then when you look at the type of crash, whether single car or side or whatever, out of those 43, only 42 are the total. So I was, you know, I asked this question last time. I looked at the survey again, and the same information was there. However, I went back and looked at Appendix E. On Appendix E, if I may look at this, it does say there was injuries. There was in 2018. Let me see, where is it? I can't remember all of this. In 2018, there were 4. In 2019, there were 6. In 2020, there were 4. And then in the severity involvement, there were also, these were non-fatal injuries. So I also need to know, what does non-fatal mean? A broken arm or what? Okay. And so in these, in 2018, there were 5. In 2019, 10. In 2024, of course, we have to keep in mind that in 2020, we had COVID, and we were asked not to be out on the street except to go to the supermarket or to the doctor. My concern is, I'm confused. Where are these numbers coming from? What table should I listen to? I feel like I'm, you know, having the little ball under, okay, now this page is on this one, now this page is on this other one. So were there injuries? Because table 6, page 17 says no injuries. And, you know, we like to know, we all have seen the ambulances, the fire trucks there. So we know, we have seen people on stretchers. And this does not include the people in the parking lot, okay? This is just the street. Because you all don't have a study, unless I missed it, a study for the parking area and injuries. Okay. Of what I hear, I don't know how true it is, but recently there was a fatality. And so We are concerned, not only the people at Horizon, but it affects all of the Rancho Vistoso neighborhood and those of us who shop at, you know, in the shopping center.
Sure. So, thank you. And, yeah, clapping's not going to be helpful. Mr. Kiesler can certainly weigh in on that. I would ask that if we can try and keep our questions succinct, just to try and make sure everybody has an opportunity to try and get one in if they have one. And, of course, we're here after the meeting, and we can certainly go into more detail for you.
After the meeting last time, and it's still the same question.
Okay, fair enough. So, Mr. Kiesler, did you have something you'd like to add?
Sure. I can shed a little light on some of this, and then I'm going to actually refer it over to the traffic engineer who actually compiled the tables, because he'll be able to do a deep dive onto the actual numbers. So, first, source of the numbers. Our police department actually keeps the source of those numbers. It's kept with Highway Patrol, also with the County Sheriff's Office, and with our own police department. So that's where the numbers originate from. And they have classifications in which they determine what is a minor injury and what they consider a severe injury. Now, I'm not familiar with a fatality in the shopping center parking lot. I am familiar with a fatality which was a red light runner on Tangerine heading east who hit a motorcycle that was under a green arrow making a left turn. So that's a recent development that happened within this past year. That's the only fatality I know of recently for that intersection. But there are certainly, and the numbers bear this out, that there are accidents in this particular intersection. With regard to the numbers of the tables, I'm actually going to hand this over to the traffic engineer to put the tables together for you.
Thank you, Paul. Mick Matthew with CivTech. So the tables, as Paul was alluded to, when we collect data on this, and again, this goes back to when we started on this project back in 2018, we're required to do a 3-year look at what these crashes look like. We get this data from, as Paul alluded to, the Oro Valley Police Department. We also have computer programming for that ADOT supplies to us and gives us these numbers. The ratings that they have in these numbers are all come from that program of where that is. Again, when we're talking about some of these non-injuries and you're saying that we've got 43, again, at that intersection of Tangerine and First Avenue, so we got 19, and then there's no injuries or other fatalities there. That means that the other incidences were basically, there's a category of non-injury, which is what Paul alluded to as minor stuff, and then there's no injury at all. So that's where those numbers come from. The types of accidents that you see there are pretty typical of a very busy intersection. When you see 15 for the left turn and 13 for rear ending, the 15 for the left turn, that's typically people failing to yield to the through traffic. If you're turning left, you have a responsibility to clear to make sure that you can make that left turn. That's typical of that type of accident, that you're not yielding to that right away. The rear end crashes, typical of people of speed, driver inattention, which is huge these days, and just failure to stop. And so these are how these are all rated like this.
Right. And I understand that. So did we have injuries? Because Appendix E does...
Okay, so if I could just ask, I mean, if we're going to get into that level of detail, would you come and meet with us afterwards? And we'll be happy to have him explain that to you. Sure. You have questions about the... Yeah, no, I got you. Well, so absolutely, we'll ask that he go ahead and answer that.
And again, keep in mind, this is an existing intersection that's out there right now. This is First and Tangerine. So that we all know that there's a great deal of traffic out there during both the AM and PM peak hours. You know, when you've got that much traffic out on the roadway, to have 43 total over a 3-year period is actually not that bad. There's other intersections within the city of Tucson where that number is up in the 90s.
We're going to go ahead and just out of respect for the conversation, keep moving on. Maybe we'll have more time to come back. So I do have a few hands up on Zoom. So if you'll please have some patience, we'll definitely come back. So Matthew, you were the first one up to ask a question. Please make sure you're unmuted on your end.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can hear you. Go right ahead.
Yeah, thank you for taking the question. Two things. If you guys could supply the sources for your numbers, something that we can look at later, just a food for thought for those of us that would like to look into that. Also, the grand total of units in both locations is at what number? Okay, sure. 200 and something?
I think it's 205. Yeah. So he's looking. So I can address the first question. So on the ovprojects.com website, if it's not up there already, it should be. But if it's not already, we will make sure that the traffic impact analysis is on there so that anybody who wants to go look at it and dive through the detailed tables and numbers and sources and appendix can absolutely do that. So
207 is the total.
Okay. 207.
207 units total from two locations. Is the traffic engineer still present?
Yes.
So 207 units, and we can probably presume that there'll be two vehicles per unit. We know what happens when our valued snowbirds come into town. The roads swell. Everything becomes more robust and more active. They're a valued member of the community. But when you add 207 additional units at two vehicles per unit, you're blowing up that number pretty big as far as traffic and safety.
Okay. Yep.
But that's all I have, sir. I appreciate it.
Okay. No, that's thank you very much. Your comment is noted. Looks like we've got an iPhone ending in 3674. Nope, just went away. Sorry, guys. I know, but folks, All right, Jesse, you are next up on Zoom. Please,
Mike.
I should probably allow you to talk. If you can make sure you are unmuted. Mr. Kiesler, 1 second, Jesse, yes.
Yeah, just real quick for clarification for the crowd and for everybody online. If you want to know where the numbers are generated from the ITE. That's the Institute of Traffic Engineers. It's a national standard which we utilize. Which generates the numbers based on the size and type of development. So not every home in the case of this type of development will have two cars, but they do have statistical averages. And in this particular category, a lot of information. That information boils down to the amount of traffic counts that are in that report. So as Mr. Spaeth mentioned, all of that information will be available online if it's not already there.
Okay, great. Thank you, Mr. Kiesler. All right, Jesse, you are up. Looks like you're unmuted. Go right ahead if you can hear us. All right, Jesse, we're going to...
Can you hear me? Okay. Sorry.
Go right ahead. Now we can hear
I had to switch my mic. I apologize. So I wasn't on the last one. I'm new to the area, so I have one qualifying question with the follow-up. So it looks like the design changed a little bit to put a roundabout and go from two entrances to one entrance. Is that correct? Was that a change from the last one?
Sure. On the east side, parcel 5U, on the screen there,
yeah.
We did. Yes, we had two entries, and one was the main one, obviously, both gated. So I'll draw in here.
Yeah, that's. I don't need to. I just want to make sure that was a change that was made, so I don't need to see it.
Yeah, we deleted the middle connection to Safeway.
So the actual question on that I had was, and I think a primary concern is what happens inside that parking lot. Is I read the traffic report and I saw there was some assumptions of percentage of volume that was going to go straight versus right. So will there be an updated traffic impact analysis done based on that change? Because I feel like now you're creating a bottleneck, and I heard there's going to be like gated entry. So now what's going to happen when everybody backs up into Vistosa and that road starts to back up during those peak hours? So it'd be good if you guys are going to do an updated traffic study on like what those simulations look like as well. So is that going to happen? I guess my question.
Sure. So I realized that over the course of this review, there have been a number of iterations of that traffic report as our plans have been adjusted. But I believe the latest version of the traffic report does incorporate that change, showing a single access, gated access on the east side.
Okay. The one I read on the website today didn't have that. So it still had two entrances with 40% traffic going straight to the one entrance and et cetera. So.
We can look into that.
And I have one other question, if I can. So this is kind of beyond this project. So looking at this project in a singular sense, there's a traffic report for that was paid by the developer. There's like five, I see these yellow signs everywhere. There's like five projects that are close, like down by Marketplace. There's like 600 units that are going on there. There's another project close there. And just in this pocket, is Oro Valley doing their own independent like traffic research on like if they approve everything, what this looks like?
Okay, thank you for the question, Jesse. I'm going to mute you, but I'm going to have Mr. Kiesler answer that question for you.
Thank you.
So what we do as a town is we look at it collectively, and as each project is presented, because not all projects actually come to fruition, we add on to what the current traffic is. So, for instance, there are every time that a project comes through, it has counts done. Now, if those counts don't incorporate the counts that we have on something else that we know, we combine those together. So we have a constant running total to know how much traffic is out there. Now, there is quite a bit of traffic out there at that one intersection, and there are some things that the town is looking at that's independent of this for enhancements to the first Rancho Vistoso Tangerine intersection that we might be able to effectuate sometime in the future when we get enough mass of traffic out there for that. But we do keep a running total on this. Yeah.
If I could add something also, too. When we are out there, the first thing that we have to do is go out there and count these intersections. So we counted several of these intersections. And then as we do this analysis, we coordinate with the town, and we get a growth factor that we apply to those traffic numbers, which we refer to as background traffic, because that's existing traffic on the roadways. And so then we take that background traffic, we add the traffic that would be generated by these two sites onto all of those intersections, and we rerun our analysis based on that. So as far as keeping track of background traffic as part of our due diligence with this report that gets reviewed and approved by the town, that's the normal course of action that we take. And then the other thing that we will always consult with the town is if there are some recent developments in the immediate area that would have an impact on this development, we add that traffic into our report as well. So the accumulation of traffic takes place within these reports as we do them.
Okay, thank you very much. Yes, Ms. Hine here, and then Gal in green, and then we'll go back across to the other side to be fair
yes,
to that side.
Real quick, I back up to Woodburn just beyond the firehouse, and the traffic has gotten very extreme and heavy since you built all the homes on the other side of Moore Road. So I think a lot of it's coming from there. My question is, though, where you're making the new exit for a light, is Woodburn still going to go on as the old original Woodburn out there where I can turn right without having to deal with people doing U-turns?
Correct. So the intersection of Rancho Vistoso Boulevard and Woodburn as it exists today.
It would stay that way.
It'll stay that way, except we're going to close the median. So yeah. You can still make a right out. You just won't have people doing U-turns there.
Yeah. But I still, and I do, I'm against this whole thing, really, I am. But I was curious about that. And at that light where you're going to put it in, that's very close to the light at Tangerine intersection. It seems like cars would be bumper to bumper. Yeah, so that's my thoughts on it.
Yes, thank you. Did you have anything to add to that, Ms. Roy? Here in the green, and then we're going to go back
thank
across
you.
To that side.
You yourself had brought up the issue with the sun setting and people on Woodburn, but I had an incident last week that scared the bejesus out of me. I was coming up from Cortero. I was coming up Tangerine Road, and the sun, you're going uphill, the sun was so bright in my eyes that it literally blinded me. I could not see. I could not see if there was a vehicle in front of me or not. I was scared to death. I immediately got over to the right, and I have been thinking about it ever since, how I could be in jail right now. I could have rear-ended someone. I could have killed someone. I got, you know, when I got over the right immediately, I thought about what if some other car was already over there trying to get by, or what if there was a pedestrian there? It happened to be when I got over to the right, I went into the parking lot of Safeway because I was afraid to keep going forward for rear-ending someone who might be stopped at that light at Tangerine Rancho Vistoso. It's a very, very dangerous situation. My question is, have any of you people who are evaluating this, have you ever tried driving up from Oracle on Tangerine at that sundown time? Has anybody experienced this but me?
No,
Nope.
I have. It completely blinds you. You cannot see what's in front of you.
Yeah.
That's my biggest concern, and that's going to be a lot of people. If that's a community there, it frightens me to no end.
Okay, thank you very much. So I know this ma'am in the blue shirt and then over there in the maroon shirt, I think.
Terrible. We have a Woodburn question. You just mentioned that you won't be able to turn left as you're heading north of Rancho Vistosa. You can't turn left onto Woodburn anymore. So right. Then, therefore, you'll be forcing us to go through that little wing. Yes. So that's how we would have to be changed. That's how we get out to Rancho Vistosa now.
That's how to get in. You can still get out this way.
Oh, we can still. Yeah, but going in, you have to. You can no longer make a turn.
Correct.
I don't think that's actually okay. Was that the question?
Yeah. Imagine you're coming up from Tangerine, two lanes on Rancho Vistoso. You come up to this light, and the light tends to stack up traffic a bit. And then it changes, you go through, and we want to then get in that turn lane that we can turn left on going on to Woodburn. And we can't do that anymore. So what we have to do is turn left at the light and go through that route.
Yeah, sure. So, the guy in the maroon shirt, and then we've got a patient gentleman in the back here.
Actually, I had to do that same type of intersection. So, if the person, you see the first, and I don't know the name of the road, we live just beyond it. So, the road that is directly off of, it'd be the first right after you turn onto Woodburn. So, they're going to have to come through the light, loop over on the wing, and then back again onto Woodburn, and then turn back again. Is that correct?
If they want to go south on Rancho Vistoso, correct. They'll also have...
Going north on Rancho Vistoso, at the light, they would turn left.
Correct.
Then they would need to turn right on that would be, I guess, an extension of Woodburn, and then turn right again onto Woodburn in order to... So, okay, and then with that little V that comes down, all of the parents coming from Painted Sky, all of us going to work, all of that does stack up on that Rancho Vistoso and Woodburn, we can't continue to go straight. I mean, like, how does that, I'm trying to picture it, because on a normal morning, the traffic backs up almost to that wash there, and so it'd be kind of caught in that V. And so that's why I'm wondering, how does that actually look on a normal morning as you head to work? Are people then turning onto that extension? Are they going straight and then turning left? How does that actually work? And are we then getting a whole bunch of congestion down where all of those new homes are trying to come out because we have all of us that are normally on that road stacked up along the field, basically, now in their backyard?
Sure.
Does that make sense? Is that
I think I get what you're saying, and more importantly, I think he gets what you're saying.
Okay. Can you put the map back on this?
It's right here.
Yeah. There you go.
Thank you. That'll be helpful. Okay. So
can you make sure just to speak into the mic, please? Yes, thank you.
Okay. So you'll actually have two options now when you're on Woodburn to exit on the Rancho Vistoso. You'll be able to go straight on Woodburn like we have, or you can take that new roadway, which we call Vistoso Drive, and take it down to the stoplight.
You can draw on this one. Okay. Sorry, the pointers don't work on that screen, so he can draw on this one.
Just do it with your finger?
Yep.
Okay. So if you're here, you can come here. You're going to have this option to be able to turn right here, and you're going to have this option going to be able to turn right there. So you'll have two different options to be able to exit out of there, where right now you have the one. Okay? So you'll have some relief
on that. And when we looked at that and analyzed that, with this intersection is just now just a right in, right out. When we looked at that, the intersection level of service there at that intersection it increased to level of service B or C or something like that. And getting back in, again, you'd be coming up. How do you clear this? You're awesome. Okay. As Paul was doing before, as you're coming up here, you're going if say you're living here, you're going to come in here, and as somebody alluded to, you're going to come in here. If you're back over in here, you're going to come here and go that way.
What about the people coming from, say they came down to Pistoza and they made a right turn? How are they going to merge with those people coming out there?
You mean coming down this way?
Yes, if they came here.
Right.
And now they make a right turn to come up Woodburn.
Right.
Then those people that are coming out of this loop here, how is that going to intersect?
It'd be a stop
sign. Stop sign there. Yeah. Yeah, we're going to have a stop sign there.
Okay. Okay, yeah, we can address that the next question. Yep. So.
What's this?
Yeah. Okay. Mr. Kiesler, did you want to, or I guess Mr. Olin, touch on proximity of streetlights? Because I've now heard that twice.
No, I'll do that, Mike.
Okay.
So, yeah, they are fairly close, but they're not the closest lights that we have in Oro Valley. So they're a little over 800 feet apart between the new one that will be up by Safeway to Tangerine Road. Now, to put that in perspective, where we have a lot of traffic and we have two close lights that work very well, we'll be first in Maine. So right off of Oracle, there's a light on Oracle in first, and then there's another light about 600 feet away that's Fry's and Home Depot. Are you familiar with that intersection? And that is able to clear through. It's all on it's the art of the timing of the light. So that's what we have to do. We have to program it correctly in order to be able to empty the traffic out properly. But it works. It can work. You synchronize those lights together, and it helps, actually. I know more lights seem anti-traffic, that it'll hold things up, but it actually, if you time it correctly, it creates more of a freer motion. And that's exactly what we have in First and Main.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Kiesler. So we've got one back here, and then we're going to jump back on Zoom. I'm stacking up folks on there as well, so please go ahead.
Okay, first of all, thank you for even hosting something like this. It allows us all the opportunity to be heard, so thank you for that. I know we've talked a bunch about traffic issues, so it's less of a question and more of a comment that I just wanted to get some information out there. As a resident of Horizons for 18 years, and a police officer for 23, currently working for the Oro Valley Police Department, I can tell you the 18,000 cars a day that go through Tangerine and the 13,000 cars a day that go up and down Rancho Pistoso Boulevard would only get worse. I know you guys have done traffic plans. I could tell you from somebody that works the opposite side of what you do, your numbers are only as good as what people report. And by that I mean when you were talking earlier, the lady in the front row, about crashes reported, or what you saw or what you read, those numbers are only good as the people that report them, me or you all, the people that get involved in that crash. There were approximately 540 crashes in the town limits last year. We're already at 470-ish. I can tell you that it's probably far higher than just that 43, because I go to the crashes at that intersection. They only get to this gentleman over here's report if you people that get involved in it actually want to make a report. If not, I go to the crash, and then it just doesn't get reported as a crash. All that gets recorded by the Arizona Department of Public Safety. So I can tell you there's more crashes at that intersection than let on. I can also tell you firsthand from someone that lives in that area, the traffic is terrible already because my son was hit at that intersection. It's absolutely terrible. To move on just a little bit more, Tangerine and Rancho Pistoso is probably in the top five intersections in Oro Valley already for crashes, putting more people in that area, more densely populated. And I know what you were saying earlier, Rancho Vistoso is not 100% built out. It doesn't need to be. We're already over congested. No. Stop.
Folks.
Stop. We'll save that one for when we actually have more of the council here. And thank you for being here as well. I really do appreciate that. I want to touch on traffic lights, and then I will get to my question, I promise. Again, as someone that works in that area, I can tell you traffic lights, you may think they work. They don't. Yeah, I get it. If they're timed right, they're usually not. The first storm that comes through town knocks that out, and then we have more problems than we did to start with. So it's more congestion when you get light failures during storms and stuff. Like I said, I think we beat that one like a dead horse. So my question for you is about the rental property themselves between those two. Again, and it's just because of what I've done for 23 years, from a police perspective, rentals are just that. They're not residents, so they don't have any tie to the community. Even if, and I saw your slide, something about most of them are like a 24-month lease. I think I saw that up there somewhere. Historically, it's not that high. That's if it's getting that high. So I have two questions, I guess. One more statement and then two questions. It's a breeding ground. Anytime we get more densely populated area, apartment complexes or rentals in general, it becomes a breeding ground for crime. None of those vehicles will be gated. Criminals get that. Or none of them will be garaged. They get that. So that brings more crime into the area that's already not needing it. So twofold, what are you going to do to not only make the residents that live there safer? Because I can tell you gated communities don't always do that. And then what are you going to do for the rest of us in that area, whether it was lighting or what have you, to make the rest of us more safe in that area? And then I'll just have one more comment after you answer that.
Sure. Thank you. So just one point of clarification on the point about build out. So Rancho Vistoso, even though it was planned for 14,000, it can never have that many because the land, like for example, Horizons is zoned for 3-story apartments, right? But that density is never going to happen. So just clarifying that one. Yeah. So in terms of renters, in 2020, well, first thing, I remember that's a refrain that we hear, over the years. And I remember standing up here probably 15 years ago, I think actually talking about this property, and that same question came up. And I believe it was Danny Sharp who stood up and said, listen, the difference is density. People who live in apartments are not more criminal. They're the same as all of us. There's just more of them per acre. But then adding to that, in 2020, Oro Valley actually commissioned a study on multifamily housing and found that within Oro Valley, a little more than 15% of all the housing units in Oro Valley are multifamily, but they only account for 13% of the serious crimes. So the data takeaway is that per unit, per dwelling unit, they're actually less criminal, not just equivalent, but fewer serious crimes per unit in apartments. It's just that you've got more of them per acre. So, if we're worried about bringing in a criminal element as renters, that's been proven wrong by that 2020 study.
That wasn't my comment. My comment is it brings in the criminals, not to live there, but that criminals prey on opportunity. That's all I'm saying is there's more opportunity for crime. That's why the question was, what specifically would you be doing to try to keep not only your renters safe, but the rest of us safe because of that? Is it lighting? Is it security cameras throughout the complexes? That type of stuff. That's what I'm asking.
Sure. Okay. I'm sorry. I misunderstood the question. So there's an on-site manager. There's security cameras. Lighting is designed for safety. It goes through the SEPTED process. Your department will review this to make sure that there's no nooks and crannies that are good hiding places. Some of the parking spaces are actually garaged. some of them, it's an option, but mostly it's just monitoring. And I think the proof is in the pudding, because if you look at Next Metro's neighborhoods, a significant majority of the residents are actually young women. And I don't think that would be the case if they were unsafe to live in. So I think the takeaway is generally Next Metro, through their treatment and management, actually create an above average level of safety for people.
Okay, thank you very much. So I do have a couple folks on Zoom I'm going to jump to, and I will make sure we get back to some of the folks. So Adam Tillotson, sorry, I'm sure I butchered that. You are up next. Please make sure you're unmuted on your end.
Yeah, appreciate that. Thank you. So quick comment for Alex Chavez. The Zoom is showing basically you typing in questions. It'd be really helpful if you could switch the view to the camera so we can see the maps and whatnot that people are talking about. Mm-hmm. In addition to that, though, I mean, considering the development is going to benefit the developer and the property manager as a result of the rental figures you were quoting earlier, in what ways is this going to benefit the residents of Rancho Vistoso and Oro Valley?
Okay, thank you. So, Mr. Olin, and we'll make sure to get that screen changed. Thank you for letting us know.
Thanks. Sure.
So I just real quick, Mr. Olin, before you start. So I just want everybody in the room to make sure they know we're still keeping notes, even though it won't be over there. So for the benefit of the Zoomers, we're going to put the map back up so that they can see. So, Ms. Chavez, if you could take Lucid off. Thank you.
Thank you for the question. As it happens, Oro Valley recently commissioned a housing study that's coming forward to P&Z next month, something like that. At any rate, it was basically one of the primary objectives was to analyze the housing supply in Oro Valley versus commercial, just trying to help the decision makers make good decisions for the long-term viability of the town economically, and also to fulfill general plan goals like providing a full spectrum of housing options. So some of the things that the study found are that there is a significant demand. All of the apartments within the town are below the stabilized rate, meaning they're technically full or over full. If you have about a 7% vacancy rate, it means that's normal turnover. And the average in Oro Valley is 5-something. So they're full. More importantly, though, you have one of the things that the study found was that last year, less than 1%, it was actually 0.6% of single-family homes in Oro Valley were considered affordable by essential occupations such as teachers, cops, firemen, nurses, et cetera. And I'm basically reading right out of that report. It says that people who have kids are 3 times more likely to leave if due to housing costs. It says that basically not providing housing stock for people in those essential occupations is very bad long-term for towns. Oro Valley right now, weekday population during work hours increases. There's about 8,000 people who come into Oro Valley to work who live outside. A lot of those people can't live here. They can't afford to live here. So although Next Metro isn't technically affordable housing by HUD standards or anything like that, it is a little bit more affordable than your typical single family home. So you've got basically the average home price, the median home price in Oro Valley has gone up almost 50% in the last 4 years across the board. This is townhomes, condos, single families. Actually, mobile homes have gone up the most. They were 60-something percent. But those are still obviously the most affordable. The study found, and we all know this is true, that retail growth is dependent on people spending money. That's housetops, rooftops in the vicinity of commercial land. Oro Valley has an abundance of undeveloped commercial land. And one of the things that the study found is that with the lack of additional housing parcels to be developed, we need to be really careful to use the parcels that are left wisely, bring in units so that some of those vacant commercial parcels can actually be viable for retail. The study even went so far as to say that the town should strongly consider rezoning some commercial parcels along major thoroughfares for high-density residential development for exactly this reason. Multifamily residential produces more than twice the retail spending per acre than single-family, and more than four times the amount of tax revenue. So for the long-term viability of Oro Valley, it's really important. That was the big takeaway from this study here. So there's more. There were recommendations involving secondary dwelling units and subsidized housing. We don't fall into those. But the primary benefits, there is an existing roadway issue. It's a safety issue at that Northern Safeway access. We can all agree on that. And this will fix it. We'll meet that demand, part of it. Actually, so I'll talk
Please.
About that in a minute.
Yep.
Just to answer the question in terms of the benefits here, we're meeting the demand. We're also taking parcels that are zoned commercial next to single-family residential parcels that were envisioned as apartments, and we're basically pulling that land use transition down. So we're eliminating permanently the possibility of a commercial development happening right up against Horizons, for example. And we're putting in what we think is an appropriate transition. It's higher density, but it's single-story. It's compatible. Those are some of the community benefits. So,
okay. Thank you, Mr. Rowland. Charles Welty, you are up next on Zoom. Please make sure you're unmuted on your end. Mr. Welty, are you able to unmute?
All right, thanks for taking my call.
Okay, yep, go right ahead.
I wanted to thank you to the police officer for his frankness and his honesty. I share many of the concerns this project negatively affects our neighborhood along with my neighbors. And thank you, Mr. Rowland, for your 2002 or 20 study. But I had a question regarding the traffic study that was done around COVID. I think there was a crime study that was done. Is there a more current study that was done?
Okay, Mr. Rowland.
So are you asking about the traffic or the housing study?
I'm not asking about the housing study that was done during 2020.
So that was commissioned by the town. I wasn't involved in that, but I think that the data in it was based on the historical trends. It was basically a snapshot in 2020, including all years up to that, looking at what has been developed and what is yet or available for development. I mean, there are vacant parcels. So I think that's the background there, but I honestly not the right person to ask about the scope of that study. I just know some of the findings.
Yeah, I have just one other question regarding the traffic, and we've all heard the same carryings on and our concerns. Has anybody talked to Golden Ranch Fire Station on Woodburn regarding delayed times and going to for, say, EMT for delayed responses, and how would the realigning of Woodburn at Rancho Vistosa Boulevard, how would that affect Golden Ranch and the people that live in Horizons when they call an EMT or a fireman?
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Welty. Well, Mr. Olin, did you have some, I mean, I can touch on that too.
Well, very generally, Golden Ranch is one of the reviewing agencies when we submit development proposals and they express no concerns.
Mr. Kiesler?
Yeah, I'd like to add one thing. So what we can do, and that's a good point that the caller just made, when we get into the detailed design, We work side by side with both emergency services, both with PD and with Golder Ranch. And one of the solutions that we've employed in the past for Golder Ranch is a mountable median. So we have one down here by Walgreens where they can just go straight over the median if they in an emergency and they have to take a left out of there because there is they wouldn't otherwise be able to do that. That's certainly something that we can do here where they could just uninterruptedly go straight across Woodburn, straight across Rancho Vistoso, under light, and be able to make a left and head up north if they need to for, say, the horizons. That's a good point, and that's, again, something that we would take care of as we're into detailed design if this project were to move forward.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Kiesler. Jessica?
I live off of Woodburn and on Bright Ridge, which is just a little ways up from there. And I've noticed that across the street from there is one of what I would call a major riparian area that runs all the way down through Freddy Canyon, which is called, is off to the west of where we're looking. And it has now, all the animals and all the wildlife all go down through that area you're tending to build on. And then they cross underneath, I guess, through the corridors, or they fly over, but it's still a significant area, and it's brought great pleasure to a lot of people to have the wildlife and the birds and everything, and it looks like that's just going to kind of build a dam that will never be crossed over by any of those animals. But since it was already being designated C1, I suppose there's no chance it would ever be left open. Somebody was going to build on there or something, and you're just trying to come up with something that is palatable. I don't think anybody in this room is going to rent one of those places or invest in it particularly. Our interest in is how it's going to change our whole environment. And those two pink areas up there are also now still C1. You don't intend to change those. So that's all going to get built up commercially in no time at all. And then when we take our little shortcut through there, we're going to have to dodge all the cars that are coming out of all the C1 areas that were left behind. So it's not going to get better. You know, you might get away with it for a little while, but it's not going to get better because that Rancho Vistoso and Tangerine is one of the worst intersections outside of, you know, a couple of going up down 77, but that's really bad because it's a major east-west corridor for all the commerce that's coming down 77. And everybody knows there's 100 trucks an hour going through there. And the speed limit's too fast. 45 miles an hour is way too fast for that because people don't go 45. They go 55. Same thing with Rancho Vistoso. It's 45 right through the middle of that Safeway complex, and people step on it the moment they get on the Rancho Vistoso, and you barely can turn left or right off of Woodburn now. And to feed your way through, trying to find the traffic at 5 o'clock with all the people coming in and out, I consider it completely unfeasible and unacceptable. But
okay,
it seems to me because it was C1, at some time somebody wants to build it, and I guess in Arizona if you own property you can do anything you want, but you're supposed to take, the city is supposed to represent us and take care of us, not make it profitable for people to build new buildings and everything in this area. And just because there's not enough housing for people who can't come in there, that's because they're building all the commercial stuff, big aerospace stuff and all that, to bring money, tax money, I assume. I don't see any other purpose for doing it. And what gives the tax money? Yeah, you can't keep up with it now.
Okay.
So,
thank you for your
comment. I don't see any value at all in the project.
Okay. Thank you. So we've only got about a half an hour left. So I would implore, if you've already heard your topic discussed, a la traffic, I'm not trying to diminish the value of that in the least, but if you've already heard your topic, please just keep it succinct so we can keep trying to get the folks who haven't had a chance to ask a question.
Okay, I have one question. I came in on this a little bit later than the rest of you, but has there been studies done on the impact of water rates owing to the additional draw on our city water?
So that one of the reviewing entities for any application like this is our water utility. So they are part and parcel of the town's review process for this. Ultimately, when the application makes it before council, of course, the water utility director is there to answer questions from council members on that as well. So yes, that is something we look at. Again, the town does have an assured 100-year water supply, just like all towns have to have by state law, which has capacity or had capacity to handle the anticipated commercial growth that was currently zoned for these properties. So we do that evaluation when a change of this type is proposed to the town. So, yes. So if we can have these two gentlemen, they've been very patient, and then one in the back has been very patient as well.
Well, I was concerned with the traffic issue, but that's been discussed, so I'll pass on this. But
mighty kind of you. This gentleman had a statement.
My name is Frank Mayfield. I'm a homeowner in Rancho Vistoso. I'd like to go on record that I am against these proposed variance requests. My primary concerns are traffic, congestion, safety, water, as well as my neighbors. They have these same concerns. Adding high-density residential units of 207 will only acerbate existing issues. We don't have to go into the traffic here, but the removal of a left-hand turn off of Rancho Vistoso onto Woodburn creates three turns to be able to access Woodburn westbound. Every fire truck, every ambulance, every school bus, every service vehicle, resident and visitor vehicles are going to end up having to go through that neighborhood, that quiet neighborhood, to access the feeder road, Woodburn, which is then accessing the access to all of our neighborhoods. So it's interesting when you read the online information packet on multiple times, there's a phrase, quote, "It has nothing to do with the traffic generated by the proposed Via Rancho Vistoso east and west developments." And I ask, why is that? That's my question. I have one more. Because real problems already exist, as this officer, the gentleman in the back, already said. Oral Valley is about quality of life and safety. My final question is, will it remain that way?
Nope. Okay, thank you. Mr. Olin, was there anything that you wish to address?
I'm not familiar with the quote or its context. I'm not sure where you're reading that from. It would help. So if you could tell me where that quote was, I might be able to tell you what it means.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Hi. So my question is, I don't live near this. I live 5 miles northwest, but I come through this intersection every day, and I use that shopping center. And one thing that hasn't been mentioned, because it's often mentioned that retail is struggling in Oro Valley, that shopping center is not struggling. It is a vibrant shopping center. It is difficult to find a parking space certain times of the day in that shopping center. And so my question is, I saw how you were diverting the traffic in and out of there through that makeshift four-way stop that exists, or three-way stop that exists right now behind Rosati's. And you're going to put lines behind that building so that no trucks park there, which will not stop them from parking there because they have to unload. And I'm not sure where you think they're going to do that if you stop them from unloading from the back of the restaurants, because there's no room from the front. So if you could put up that diagram again. So I'm concerned about how that's all going to work, because you also have the neighborhood, the 87 homes that are there emptying out into that same little area. And right now, it's already a bottleneck. And now you've got people coming in, they get the light, and they're just going to come in. And you've got people trying to get out of that community. I mean, have you been to this shopping center? You know, it's already really, really busy in that little spot right there where you think you're going to bring in all of these people from this community. So this needs to be looked at, because that's the only way to get in from parts north. And my second question is, are you going to stop the exit where the gas station is? Because if you're not, you're really going to have another problem, because you have a traffic light at Tangerine, people who can come out of the gas station area, and then another light here. I mean, it's already a problem for the people coming out of the gas, but for the people who are waiting behind that building there, when the people come out of the gas station, you're trying to make a right-hand turn, and people just keep coming out of the gas station area, even when the light changes. So it's already a problem area to get in and out of. And so my concern is, how deeply have you looked into this little bottleneck over here?
Okay. Yes, thank you very much. Mr. Olin?
Sure. Well, I would say that this is, of all the acres that we're looking at, this is the most focused on area because it's tight. We've worked very closely with our traffic engineer, civil, the town, and what we're trying to figure out here is, to your point, there's an existing problem there, right? And so, and we've also got 8 acres of commercially zoned land up there that is planned for development of one sort or another. So we need to solve the access problem here, to Mr. Spaeth's point. So what we've looked at is finding a balance between the length of these turn lanes. Obviously, we've got this building here, so that's a constraint. There's a bunch of drainage there that we're actually going to be infrastructure that we're going to be relocating. In terms of the loading zone, if you look at the development plan and actually the aerial, so right here, you can see there's a striped out loading zone there. That's actually the approved loading zone in this design that's already built. I didn't do this design, but that was the intent to serve this building, and the idea was that a truck would park there and then use a hand truck to make their deliveries to these tenants. Listen. I didn't design it, but the point is there is a spot for it, and more importantly, there's no room for those delivery trucks to be where they're at today, and we're trying to solve that. That's the big problem.
I hear what you're saying, but you need to go down there and see what it's like at 2 in the afternoon.
I'm very familiar with it.
And, you know, we certainly take a look at it as part of the application, I can assure you. Mr. Keister, is there anything to add from your perspective?
Yeah, Mr. Olin hit on all the major points here, and that is I have been back there many, many times. I have seen the trucks that do load there and shouldn't be parked there at that three-way stop right now, because they further occlude the vision. That sidewalk is too high, particularly in somebody in a lower automobile, to be able to sneak out far enough to be able to see. There are accidents back there. We need to solve that. We need to solve the accidents there. We need to solve the accidents on Rancho Vistoso. We hear you. That's how the town represents you, is that we know of those things. This presents itself as an opportunity for us to look at it and to come up, and these are the solutions that this developer was willing to offer. And speaking from, you know, your traffic engineer representing you, there's a lot of good solutions that are present in this particular application that directly addresses those major accidents that were that we've experienced over these many years.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Keister. Got a couple more back here, and then we'll grab these folks over here, and we're getting short on time, so please be quick.
Okay, so the traffic impact study that was done the last time, you had indicated that it was partially done during 2020, and COVID was, we have practically had a shutdown through March of 2020. So I'm questioning, do you have a new study? Does it have a new traffic count that includes the time that the snowbirds were here and the time that there were actually people out on the streets driving? And when you did the traffic count that the CivTech gentleman said, when was that done? What time of the year? and what times of day? And has any consideration also been given to the 59 homes that you want to put down in the wash?
Okay, thank you very much. We'll let the traffic engineer get out his details.
In regard to the question about the COVID, we had a standard COVID adjustment that we used, that we presented to the town and was accepted. This version of the report that I have, the final approved version, is August 2022, is the date of that report. So I'm not sure what report you are looking at. Let me find that when we collected the
And we can, while he's looking at that, we'll make sure that we have the most recent version on the website. It may just be that we have the old version on there. It could be the case. Okay, we got to keep rolling. We got a couple folks on Zoom who haven't had a chance to talk either. So while you're looking at that, if we could have the other, oh, back there. Yep. I'm sorry. Well, I know. Okay, we're going to keep moving. Go ahead, sir.
Okay, I back up one of the nine houses that back up to the proposed 87-house development there that wants to use the alleyway and the front of Safeway as a major thoroughfare. As far as risk mitigation for the city, this is a disaster. I mean, people are going to get killed there. I would think that that part of the proposal, the other one's just as bad, putting this many homes there, but I can't even believe that the city is entertaining this proposal to use an alleyway and a parking lot to put 90 homes that you say there might be one car per home. There could be four cars per home. Is there anything in the leases that prevent four people from living in a single unit?
Ms. Rowland. I'm going to jump on Zoom, and then we'll go over there.
If I may go back to the question about when the traffic counts were done, we collected those in October of 21 and December of 21.
Okay. Ms. Rowland, did you have an answer on the restricting of parking? Did you answer that and I missed it? Restricting of the number of cars?
So when we look at how many spaces to put in here, we look for examples of what would be the optimal number so that it isn't too far overparked. We don't want it to be underparked. And fortunately, Next Metro has a number of other neighborhoods, so we're able to look at those and look at real data from those in terms of what the parking needs are of our residents. So we're confident that this parking will serve this number of units well.
Okay, thank you. While you look that up, I'm going to have
we've got for the east piece, we have 177 spaces for 88 units, and that includes 88 ADA spaces. And on the west side, for 119 units, we have 248 spaces, including the required ADA spaces. And they're spread out throughout the development so that they...
But so if I can interpret what you're saying, Next Metro has their standard based on their other communities that you've put into the design. I'm not hearing that there's a specific restriction that any unit can have in terms of the amount of cars they can have, right?
So the FHA actually does have limits. Okay. I'm not sure what they are, but we're well within those.
Okay. So there's the answer for your question. Yep. So Joyce's iPad is up next on Zoom. It looks like you're unmuted, so please go ahead.
Thank you very much. Can you hear me?
We can hear you, yes.
Okay. This is Council Member Joyce Jones-Ivy. For the gentleman at the very beginning of the meeting that inquired about council being present, I'm not physically present, but I have been Zooming this meeting for all concerned. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for letting us know. Thank you for joining us.
You're welcome.
And up next on Zoom, we have Steve. Oh, my goodness, I'm going to butcher that. Steve J. We're going to go with that. Sorry, Steve. Please make sure you're unmuted on your end.
I'd like to thank the community for being here and showing up and expressing all of the concerns that we have about this project. I'd also like to thank the town staff and Joyce for being here as well. It is very clear this project is not compatible with our community. I did want to make a quick comment. There was a gentleman earlier that said the light timing at First and Main was acceptable. I could not disagree more, and I encourage you to drive north on Oracle and make it into Rancho Vistoso through that route during rush hour. You will see the issues with traffic stacking up on the light on Main to let one or two cars through. It's a huge problem. I do have some questions, Mr. Oland. I'd appreciate if you get a pen because you did not answer some of these questions last time. Is there going to be a manager on site 24/7? And how many U-turns and how long will it take them to get from one property to the next if there's just one manager per property or just one manager in general? The data shows that this company sells these properties within a year or two after development. So Olin talks about how these policies are in place, like background checks and security. I kind of wonder how these policies will be enforced when the developer doesn't even own the property anymore. And then I would also like to know if this development is so great, why can't you put it somewhere that's already zoned properly for this project?
Okay, thank you. We will have Mr. Oland answer those questions. So did you catch all those, Mr. Oland?
I think so.
Okay.
Okay, well, so from last to first, why not on existing land that's zoned for this? There's really not much of that in Oro Valley at all. If there was a parcel that would allow this development without going through this extremely enjoyable process, we'd be looking really hard at that. There just isn't.
Second question was, what happens when and if Next Metro sells the property?
So if Next Metro were to sell this property, there's kind of a funny notion that multifamily properties are somehow different from any other real estate asset.
7-year
trading depreciation is different. Thank you. So what we have...
if we could focus.
So when somebody comes in, if this were to be sold, for example, Next Metro is going to invest more than $60 million in this. If somebody were to come in and successfully purchase it, if Next Metro actually wanted to sell it, there would be a higher price tag. And anybody who comes in and buys an asset of that value is going to make darn sure that they're preserving that asset as much as they can. The idea that gets suggested is that a company or an investment firm would come in and spend tens of millions of dollars and then let that asset quickly degrade. That doesn't make sense. And that's not how people who would purchase something like this would operate. What was the first question?
And then the first question was on-site managers. Does each property have one, or is there just one?
There's an on-site manager during business hours, and then emergency after that.
And just one or two?
One.
Okay, one for both properties. Yeah. Okay, thank you, Mr. Rowland. So we've got, we're getting close here on time. So the folks over there by Jessica, please.
Hello. My name is Patricia Howie, and I have come with some brief observations and food for thought. The objections to rezoning the area next to Safeway in my neighborhood, Horizons, have been numerous, dealing with a variety of issues.
In going over this information, it appears to be a lot of we the people of the Rancho Vistoso area complaining, then the proposed builders gathering this information, and then going back to their drawing boards to poke holes in our concerns, so there will be no reason left to not rezone the area. Well, I will give you a very important reason not to rezone. Oro Valley has taken a great deal of pride in advertising the city as being a beautiful, safe place to live. What sets Oro Valley apart is its open spaces, which equates to higher quality of life. This type of proposed growth at Tangerine and Rancho Vistoso is continuing to blend one neighborhood into another, resulting into making us into a miniature Tucson with all of its traffic problems and rising crime statistics, neither of which can be brushed aside by community plans. Lastly, do I need to remind you that once land is taken away, we cannot get it back? Sure, you can say that with the commercial status of this land, more shops and stores can go in at any time. I, for one, would like to take my chances and keep the zoning as it stands now. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Gentleman in the blue shirt, and then I know we've had two more over here who've been very patient.
One of my questions has already been taken. I'm going to talk about home prices, or ask. Has anybody looked at a study on what this does to the existing home prices of the homes butting up against these?
So, yeah, that question came up early in this process. So we did look at that. And if you look over in La Reserve, that's a good example of where there's higher density residential right up against single family, because those two don't actually exist side by side too often in Oro Valley, at least. And those are higher density than this. Those are two stories. They were apartments converted to condos. But if you look at the years after, right after they were built, the surrounding home values weren't affected. They tracked with the general increase in home values for all the rest of the homes in Oro Valley. It was the same line. So after the multifamily got built next door, there was no dip. So
okay, thank you. Got time for two more questions for folks who've been very patient, and then we'll go on.
How do you plan to prevent the federal government from forcing you to do equity renting, for example, to illegals or whatever? How would you prevent that?
Vote in the right people. Jessica. I would vote in the right people.
Okay, two more questions.
Hi. You guys say that it's affordable housing, and we need a more affordable housing here in Oro Valley, but most of us here tonight, disagree with that. There is a lot of affordable housing that has been built in the last 15 years, and we have a bunch of them going up near Walmart, which is where they should be. We don't want them in our backyard, and they're not even affordable because you admitted it yourself. You said a normal house, like my house, can rent for $1 a square foot, but you're going to rent those for $1.75 a square foot? You know, that's not affordable. And you can't guarantee that there's going to be single mothers living there with no drugs. I mean, is there going to be security guards there? Like, I know it's going to be gated, which I think is going to be a nightmare, but is there going to be security guards there to make sure that there's no drugs and alcohol, whatever, parties and things like that?
There's a lot of self-reporting, from neighbors who are paying a premium to live in that safe environment. And there are few guarantees in life, right? So what we can go off of are the data. And we have with this developer actually a lot of data to base this on. And that's their target market. And even though it's higher per square foot, the rents are typically a little bit lower, though, than your average mortgage. So compared to that, they are more affordable. They don't fit the HUD definition of affordable by any means. But within Oro Valley, which has elevated values, elevated housing costs, it is on the more affordable end of that spectrum, which Oro Valley study has said is desperately needed.
Okay, we've got time for two more in the room, and there's one person on Zoom who's been patiently waiting. So if we can just quickly get to those.
I will be very quick, and I don't need a response at this point. Apparently, you're going to be grading parts of the property. This will be digging up the fungus that causes valley fever, dangerous for those of us with lung issues. What are your plans to mitigate it? And then also, living adjacent to Woodburn, this is going to create filth in our homes. How are you planning on mitigating that to get free weekly house cleaning for the duration of the project? And then to follow up with Mitch's question, yes, what is that going to do to our home values and our taxes living across from that? Thank you. Okay. I don't need responses now.
Mr. Kiesler, would you mind touching on the requirements for keeping dirt impacts in check?
So, dust. There we go. Dust mitigation is not something that Oro Valley directly monitors. This is a Pima County ADEQ criteria. So they have to get a permit when they go into construction from DEQ. And then Oro Valley has a series of inspectors. We're out and monitoring, and if for any reason we find that there's a dust generation issue, we immediately coordinate with DEQ to go ahead and make sure that the contractor is in compliance. Now, that's not to say, and to be completely honest, there is some dust that is generated with a construction project. I won't steer you awry with that. But there are dust levels that are monitored and are maintained. And the contractor is subject to serious fines if DEQ comes in and finds that they're not policing the site the way they should be.
Ooh, I like that song. Thank you, Mr. Kiesler. Okay, go right ahead.
Oh, you're going to hold it? All right. First, I want to thank Tim Bowen for being here. And the councilperson Jones Ivy for being in on the Zoom, because it's important that these people are going to make this decision, that they be involved. So my hat is off to both of them. Thank you.
I will acknowledge that Councilmember Nicholson also joined us as well, so okay. He's here also.
So at least we have half the council. My point is that I want to make is that these parcels are a part of the Rancho Vistoso master plan, and they have been intended from the start to provide services for the hundreds of people that have moved in and developed Rancho Vistoso, my neighbors, okay? And in this, there was a current development plan that was put in place on October 17th in 07. And in that, it called for the C1 designation. And on that plan, it had listed the first priority was professional office. Second priority was restaurant, up to a 34-foot height, which could be a three-story professional office building. The last meeting we had here, there was a call-in participant that was looking for professional office space and couldn't find it anywhere. More recently, the Pima Heart people, the largest cardiologist deal in southern Arizona, outgrew their space over in the building next to the hospital. They're looking for new space. All of their patients are in this area in Rancho Vistoso. They wanted to stay in this area to service their patients. Pima Heart was forced to go to a retail storefront location next to the theater here in the marketplace because it was the only thing that was available to them, which speaks to two issues. You know, number one, we don't have the professional office space available for the hospital development, which I know we could fill. And secondarily, we have a retail problem with the marketplace. We know that as well. So, and thirdly, just a comment that I do know that we have Mercado del Rio available as the C1. That is another problem area that the last reiteration was they were trying to put in storage garages instead of the C1 designation. and storage garages, and they're going to do RV storage and all this kind of crazy stuff. Well, that's a parcel. It's a little bit smaller, but a villa. What's your name? Next Century?
Yeah. Next Metro.
Which I believe is the same company, which is a huge conglomerate and could just move on down the street and take over that space. And it wouldn't have the traffic problems, and it doesn't have the congestion issues because of the way where it's situated.
Okay. Sorry. Anything to add, Thank Mr. Rowland?
You know, just very briefly. So commercial land is more valuable than residential land. That's a broad brush statement, but it's generally true. And so the owner of a commercial parcel will gladly sell it to a commercial user if there's one there to buy it. So in Rancho Vistoso, there are 392 acres, 5% of the entire master plan is dedicated, planned from 1987 for commercial use. If you look at the Oro Valley General Plan, it's about 3.5% versus over 5%. Scottsdale's general plan is about 1.5% commercial. So the fact that there are a number of vacant commercial parcels that are undeveloped and have been, I mean, they've been zoned for years and no one has come forward to develop them. As landowners, if we could snap our fingers and say, bring me a wonderful developer to come buy this land and do business here, we would do it all day long. But there are many, many acres throughout the town that are undeveloped, and it's because there's not enough customers. In terms of offices, there are dozens and dozens of acres of undeveloped campus park land over by the hospital. There's a really nice office complex there that's mostly built out, but there's room for more, and they've actually got plans to do more. You know, the way retail and office developers work is if you've got one user and you've got a big piece of property, it just doesn't pencil to turn the property on for one user. You've got to have a certain amount of commitment. You know, maybe a quarter or more of the property needs to be fillable on day one so that you can start collecting rent. Otherwise, you're just sitting there with vacant space. And there has been historically a lot of vacant shop space around Oro Valley. I think Pima Heart, I wouldn't say is a lovely use for one of those, but they found a spot, and there are better spots for them that are available, undeveloped, zoned for that kind of use in proximity of Oro Valley Hospital. So there's a lot of good opportunities out there. The Mercado del Rio piece, the reason that was stated by council when they denied that storage application was that they wanted to hold it back for commercial use. So I tend to think that they wouldn't approve this there either. So yeah, they wouldn't approve this there either, I would guess, because that's what the logic suggests. But point is, there's a bunch of acres here that are likely never to be developed as envisioned by Rancho Vistoso, not only because Rancho Vistoso was overplanned from a commercial standpoint, but because it was underdeveloped from a residential standpoint. So you've got those two factors working against the development of this ever happening according to that original plan. So this what we're putting forward is a good transitional use. If you go tour these, they are good neighbors. They are quiet. They are low rise. They are generally white collar residents. These are nice, high value, good transitional uses for these lands. And that's what we're proposing. And that's what we believe.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Rowland. So we got one last Zoom call we're trying to get to. I know we've gone over a little bit. I appreciate everybody's patience. So phone number ending in 3674. Looks like you're unmuted. Please go right ahead.
Yes. My name is Joe Casey. I live in the Horizon subdivision here. That's under question and microscope, of everybody's opinions. And I appreciate the time to be able to speak at my first meeting. I do understand and realize progress is a part of life, and business is essential. There's no question about it. I think the owners that own this property, the first owner and the second owners, both knew it was a C1 zone. You can't put a square peg in a round hole. And that's what they're trying to do here. Okay? You guys are creating more confusion, more work, and it's not going to happen. You heard an officer that does it for a living. I've lived here almost 12 years. The cars that come down this road, they're not doing 45 like the other gentleman saying. They're doing 70. Yes. They're doing 70 miles an hour. I've been gone for 8 months traveling back and forth to Montana. And since I've been back, there was 6 accidents within a mile away from that facility, from that area. There's just an abundance of people. So your statistics and your ratings and your percentage, that's out the window. That's baloney, because I could get all the statistic I want to critique and challenge what you're saying. The people of Oro Valley don't want it. So once you utilize what that's zoned for and bring in businesses that will strive and grow and prosper. I don't want to freaking, when I bought this house, I knew that was a zone C1. If I knew they were going to change it, I wouldn't have bought this house. You guys can't sit there and change your rule book. Okay? My family's been in business 75 years. I've done rental properties. You can change your lease. You can change your requirements. So don't tell me, oh, the guy's going to be a felony. He can't get in there. Yeah, that'll last until the property's sold to the next guy, and then he changes his lease to accommodate him. This proposal does nothing for the residents of Oro Valley. It doesn't put money in our pocket, okay? And these councilmen and mayor, they better start looking real quick and realizing that there's more than just this on the table, okay? I think a majority of people have spoken their mind and pointed out that they don't want it. Okay? Sit there and hold on a minute. I'm not done. If I have to drop my kid off at Painted Sky, I got to do a figure eight in order to get back to my house? No. It ain't happening. Okay? And if I had my choice, I'd go a different route with this deal. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Okay, thank you very much. I really do appreciate everybody's patience. We've gone over a little bit. Like I said, I know the applicant staff will hang out afterwards. So if you have questions that you still have, please don't hesitate to come up here. Before you guys leave, I do just want to remind everybody. So the next steps are these two cases are going to go to commission next month, and then they're going to go to council in January. That's the plan. Both of these are public opportunities for everybody to come and say the same things you've said tonight. So please go to ovprojects.com. If you've got other questions or comments, you can always contact Jessica. And just selfishly, I do ask if you guys could take part in the survey. Let us know how we're doing. See if there are things that we can do better. I really appreciate everybody's time. Thank you.
Okay. You may.